Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. A few months ago, the news broke that OSU head football coach Jim Tressel had failed to disclose violations by several of his players of NCAA rules at the time. OSU, especially OSU president Gordon Gee, stood by his coach and said that Tressel's job was never in jeopardy.
Now, are you kidding? Let me just be very clear I'm just hopeful the coach just doesn't dismiss me.
That was in March, and more recently, allegations have emerged that Jim Tressel might have lied to the NCAA at the time. Joining us now to talk about how the troubles have affected the university or not, and other current issues is OSU President Gordon Gee. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ann. Let me just be clear, and that is the fact that we're in the middle of an ongoing NCAA investigation, so I'm just not going to talk about football.
Right.
Period.
Okay.
And so I think that, I'll talk about our national championship volleyball team. I'll talk about the fact that our women's track team won the Big Ten. I'll talk about the fact that we have a national championship pending team in tennis. And I'll talk about all the great academic and other things we're doing. But we're in the middle of an NCAA investigation. So in the middle of that, one does not talk about those things. So,
understood.
Let's move on.
Ancillary, but not about that, particularly during a recent program on the topic, one caller complained that OSU gets picked on, that nobody likes OSU, and that it's being targeted. Do you feel that way?
Oh, no. I think that, we're the largest, most comprehensive university in the country, and so therefore, with our size, with our scope, with our power, comes also scrutiny. And so I think that that's very important for us all to understand. The one thing that I do feel very confident about is that we're an institution of great integrity, and we're following the rules, and we will make certain we follow the rules, and we'll continue to have that be our statement about the world in which we live.
Ohio State is one of the few big-time athletic schools that actually addresses athletics in its mission statement. Mm-hmm. Would OSU be the same without its sports? And I'm not just talking about football.
I've always said about college athletics that they represent both the highs and lows of an academic institution. There are very few things that we can do that bring us more attention. I always like to point out that football is about 0.1% of our budget. As just one example, our athletic programs put about 1% or a little bit more than 1% of our budget. And so, but yet it receives an inordinate amount of attention. I have a hard time fathoming that we'd get 106,000 people in the stadium watching us doing a chemistry experiment. So therefore, what it does is it provides a spirit and provides an opportunity for us to tell the university story. But it also has all the kinds of ancillary issues that can come with it, and I've been through that for 31 years, and so I understand both the power and the challenges that come from intercollegiate athletics.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Gordon Gee, president of Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment for President Gee, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm still trying to get used to using the phone number, the call-in phone number, instead of the donate to WOSU.
Oh, really? Well, you can do that too.
Donate
to anyone else you want to. There's always that opportunity, right, Ann?
It's too late now for that. You know, we just had our big membership drive, and
how did it go, by the way?
Didn't make it.
Well,
didn't
we'll make
our
it.
Goal.
We'll make it. We'll make it through the end of the season. That's what's important.
Well, it was my segue to fundraising for OSU, and it's a banner year in donations for athletics.
Well, it's actually a banner year in donation for the university in general. Mm-hmm. We're doing very well, and I'm very grateful for that. You know, we lost our great leader in Dr. Sorensen, who died after he'd only joined us for 6 months, and it's been a real blow to the university. On the other hand, our folks in development, our folks in our advancement programs have just picked up the pieces and moved aggressively forward. Jeff Kaplan, who has been with me for so many years, is like the greatest, is like a famous utility infielder. He just kind of comes and immediately moves in and moves the program forward. So we're very blessed to have, individuals, corporations, communities, that really do believe in this university all around, all the way around the world, and they continue to support us at very high levels.
As you mentioned, OSU's chief fundraiser, Andrew Sorensen, died just about a month ago now, and Jeff Kaplan has been named Senior Vice President of Development to head that $2.5 billion campaign. What changes do you think Jeff might bring to the program, is it already kind of laid out and he's going to carry it out?
Well, I think first thing is we have a very aggressive schedule for ourselves, and Jeff will continue to execute that. Secondly, while we're in the middle of this process of what we say moving from development communications, alumni relations to advancement, where we bring those elements together, where they are a course instead of a cacophony, and so he'll continue along with Archie Griffin and Tom Katzenmeyer to drive that process, and we need to make that happen because that's a unique characteristic of this great public university. And then obviously he has his own strengths, his own issues, and he will bring those to the table and make some changes based upon what he feels needs to be made.
Barbara in Columbus, you're on the air. You want to talk about goings on at the legislature?
Yes. Good morning. I was wondering, with Governor Kasich wanting to bring Teach for America in to Ohio, and of course all the cuts that are being made and all of that, I'm wondering, Teach for America has a 5-week session to teach mostly non-educator college graduates how to teach, and I'm wondering how the various college presidents are justifying college of education and 5-year programs if it only takes 5 weeks to learn how to teach.
Well, I mean, they are doing this as in a volunteer service. It's a great program. It's the same as the Peace Corps, a variety of other things. We have a standing army. We don't do away with that because we have a Peace Corps. We have a Secretary of State. We don't do away with the State Department, and it's the very same thing. I mean, what we're doing is we're getting very bright people, and by the way, it's a way for them to think about whether or not they want to go into teaching. And those who really want to go further into teaching from Teach for America, what they do is then they go back and get further training. I think it's a great program, and I'm glad that it's coming to Ohio. It should have been coming to Ohio a long time ago, frankly.
Thank you, Barbara, for your call. There's also talk of getting universities, or there's a – I think it's in the state budget to have state universities have a plan for making 10% of their program 3-year degrees by 2012.
Well, that's part of the discussion about how do we make ourselves more affordable, more efficient, more effective, of which we all agree. I think one of the things that has been readily apparent through this budget process is two things. One is the fact that the universities and colleges, and particularly Ohio State, has been in a very tough budget year, has been enormously well supported, and I'm grateful to the support of our governor and our legislative leadership and the bipartisan legislature, realizing that I think that the university does serve as the economic and social and cultural engine in this state, along with my colleagues in higher education. So that's number one. Number two is the fact that as part of the continuing support and recognition we receive, we always need to take a look at how we can do what we do better. There was this issue about teaching responsibilities, a variety of other things. I, by the way, never use the word load. I don't think that teaching is a load. I think it's an opportunity and responsibility. And we've had, I think, a healthy discussion. Our provost made a brilliant presentation to the legislature, noting that a very complex university like ours, one size doesn't fit all. And so, therefore, I think we're having those kinds of discussions, which have been very useful. But what it does tell me is the point that I've made internally and will continue to make, and that is the fact that the world has changed. If we're going to be able to thrive as a university, not survive, but thrive as a university, that we need to be constantly vigilant about how we can do things better and be very creative as we are in our classrooms and as we are with our research about how we can think differently about higher education. So technology is one of those things that is a vast array of opportunities for higher education. Also, and I always tell the story about the fact that I get up very early, as you know, and I get on my treadmill and I'm watching television for a minute. And there is this young lady who comes on and says, "I'm in my pajamas and I'm getting a college degree and I'd like to run off the daggone you know, treadmill and just shake her and say, hey, look, you know, you're getting something, but you're not getting a college degree. A college degree is not simply time and place. It's also the kind of collegiate experience that you have. The most important learning that takes place in an educational environment is what takes place outside the classroom. Our teaching is fabulous. Our faculty are great mentors, but it's those kind of conversations that occur late at night and in the over the pizza box and a variety of other things that are enormously important, and that you cannot substitute for through technology.
3 years, when you talk about getting a degree in 3 years, are they talking about maybe making it so that you can go to school year-round?
I think there are a number of options like that, but, you know, there are certain areas like, you know, in the biological sciences, in engineering, a variety of other things, where actually it would be impossible to get that and get the kind of educational training and mission you want to have. But there are certain areas in which we can take a look at it, absolutely. And, you know, but my point is the fact that one size doesn't fit all, and so therefore what you do is you take a look at areas in which you can improve the delivery system, and you do that. In areas in which there are different kinds of challenges, then you improve what you're doing, but it does not necessarily mean time to degree is an automatic issue on these kinds of discussions.
Sometimes people make the argument that in things like the biological sciences or in areas like engineering, I suppose, and I'm stereotyping a little bit, but what do they need humanities for? What do they need English for? I mean, in other words, if they're just in the biological sciences, is that where you see some people thinking, what do they need all that gobbledygook for? They're scientists.
That's actually a great question. It's one that I appreciate because of the fact that I think that the difference between the American educational system as a whole and, say, the European system or the former Soviet model or the Chinese model, all of which are trying to move toward the American system, is the fact that The one of the hallmarks of the American system is not only do we have a great educational system at the higher education level, the best in the world, but secondly of all, part of that is because of the fact that we have large and small and public and private and Catholic and Mormon, and we have all this kind of choice. But the third part of it is the fact that we have this kind of creative engine that I visited with the Minister of Education of China, responsible for 1.3 billion Chinese, and one of the first questions he asked me, he said, how do you Americans teach creativity? How we teach about it is the fact that we have great universities that include the liberal arts and the social sciences that require engineers to be able to speak Shakespeare, and by the way, require humanists to be able to think about science and technology. And it's that cross-fertilization. The core of our university and the core of our existence goes through the humanities, particularly, and the social sciences, but particularly the humanities. You can't have an educated population who really does not understand the value of music and art and the value of reading and the value of understanding Shakespeare and Molière and whatever it is. And to move toward a technical education is to move away from the notion of having an educated population.
My guest is Gordon Gee. He's president of Ohio State University. If you want to have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also get a little chat going on our website at wosu.org/allsides. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Wednesday at noon, it's a conversation with retired U.S. Senator George Voinovich. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org.
Support for 89.7 comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television, and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU Public Media.
And it's about 48 degrees in downtown Columbus. Expect rain showers off and on throughout the day today and chilly, a high of just 53. Rain likely tonight, a low of 50 degrees. A chance of showers and thunderstorms for Wednesday, a high of 62. More rain Wednesday night and a low of 52 degrees. And that chance of rain is still here on Thursday with showers and thunderstorms possible. A little warmer on Thursday, a high of 66. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Ohio State University President Gordon Gee. If you have a question or comment for him, as I've said before, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Alex in Granville, you wanted to kind of continue that conversation about what we need to get a college degree these days.
Right. Well, I'm a recent graduate of OSU's College of Biological Sciences, and what I wanted to say was that OSU is a great education, but a bachelor's degree in biosci, at least, is more or less worthless as anything that isn't accepted as a qualification for further degrees. And so for people who get a degree like that, either you're going to end up as maybe a teacher or a health professional, in which case you're going to be a leader who needs to be able to work with people, and in which case the humanities background is very, very useful. Or if you go on to hire to be like a master's degree or a PhD for lab work, you need to be able to write and communicate your ideas very clearly. And for people who don't end up on either of those paths, having sort of a backup plan is very useful. So I think that people tend to flag off on the humanities a bit because they're focused on what people perceive as a little bit harder. But without that education, I think people often run into a lot of trouble.
Well, Alex, you're my hero. I really appreciate that because that's precisely the point that I wanted to make. You make it much better, and you're a recent graduate. I recently gave a speech in which I said I'm very supportive of STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, but I really want to turn STEM to STEAM, which is science, technology, mathematics, and engineering, but the A is for the arts and humanities. I really do think that we need to make certain that we do not lose our sense of place, purpose, opportunity, our sense of humanity by narrowly defining who we are in terms of our educational system. I appreciate that call.
Thank you, Alex. Let's see. David in Westerville. This is a self-serving call. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Ann. And hello, Mr. President.
Hey, David. How are you?
Good. But I've just survived another pledge drive.
It wasn't so bad.
No, it was.
Okay.
And it's worse on the staff, I think. And it's my understanding that WOSU is the flagship for the university.
It is.
And the university owns it.
It does.
And pays 15% of its budget. I think OSU should pay more, say 30% to 45%.
Hey, David, how did you get on the air? I want to know how you got on the air.
I don't know, David. I've never heard his voice before.
Maybe
you could explain the relationship between the university and WOSU.
The university does.
Thank you,
thank you very much, David, by the way. You know, if we had a printing press in the basement, we'd send WOSU more money. We don't. But saying that. The relationship is a very simple one. That is the fact that WOSU does belong to the university, but it is a public broadcasting network, which means that it has that there's kind of a triumvirate of ways of support of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, private donations, the university's physical support, but also the university provides much more than just that 15%. I mean, you know, it's part of our infrastructure. We provide the house, we do all sorts of things. So the university has made a major commitment in this area. I guess maybe the best analogy is that it's like our agricultural programs, where we have set up a system where there are shared responsibilities, and we are meeting our responsibilities. We need to make certain that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and others meet their responsibilities in terms of supporting of public broadcasting in general.
Including our listeners.
Including our listeners, absolutely. I mean, the thing about it is I get a lot of notes about, gee, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? And then what we've done is we have really put a lot of emphasis on this. We sold our FM station. We now have our AM station. We now have an FM station. We're now back into all the things that people wrote me about. And I'd be very interested. In fact, I'm going to go through my emails of all the people who wrote about that we should have Charlie Rose here and we should have that and we should. And I'm going to see if they've been donating. In fact, if they haven't, I'm going to send them a personal note. So beware.
Thank you, David, for that call. If you want to talk with Gordon Gee, 614-292-8513, or you could email us at allsides at WOSU.org. And Tom in Circleville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi there. Thank you. I graduated from Ohio State. I have 3 degrees, two of which are in education, one in psychology. My sons went there and graduated. One is a doctor and one is a teacher. And I'm just aghast at Ohio State praising this Teach for America. It is degrading to Ohio State's own College of Education. It is degrading to the profession of teaching. It's based upon the notion that anybody can teach. If you get some bright, able, the best and brightest kid from the Ivy League who graduated in accounting or engineering or something else, that person being the best and brightest, and since anyone can teach, is just hunky-dory to come in, take a quick 5 or 6 weeks course from an institute, and come in and just save everybody. Our governor said they'll ride in on their white horses with their white hats. Well, it is degrading, and that's my comment.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Well, you know, I'll respond to Tom and say that that's nonsense. It's not degrading. It is another way for us to make certain that we attract bright and able people into the teaching profession, and it's also another way for us to make certain that we're improving the quality of our public education. And it's not degrading to this university or to any of our students. But I would say this, that a large number of our own students, it's not simply those from the East Coast schools that participate. It's large numbers of students from the Big Ten who want to participate and who do participate in Teach for America. I think, frankly, that kind of thinking is precisely the reason that a public education in this country has moved from first to 15th or 16th in terms of overall performance, because of the fact that we're not willing to think creatively and energetically about the kinds of ways to improve the quality of public education. There is no sacredness to just the way that we do things. There are options, opportunities, and the more creative we are, the better off we're going to be as a nation.
Thank you, Tom, for that call from Circleville. Governor John Kasich spoke on March 23rd during a news conference about quickening or speeding up the transfer of university research to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to him.
Ohio State could become a charter university, which means a lot of the rules and the regulations are gotten rid of so Ohio State can move quickly. I remember the CFO telling me all the hoops they had to jump through in order to raise a little bit of money. Ohio State's a giant entity here. It ought to have freedom and flexibility. We're working on that.
So within that statement, he mentions Ohio State and charter universities in the same thought. Is Ohio State going to be the first charter university
in Ohio?
Well, first
of all, we don't use that term, and let me explain to you. We really talk about it being an enterprise university, and that means that as I've always noted, and this was probably one of my first speeches in 1990, was I indicated that we needed to have much more flexibility in terms of our ability to be able to do the kinds of things that we should be doing as a university. We're an overregulated and underfunded, as are most institutions. And what the governor is saying, I applaud, I agree with absolutely, and that is the fact that we need to be given more opportunity to be entrepreneurial and be able to manage in significant ways to be an institution that really takes charge of its own environment. With accountability, let me just say this. There are some people who talk about, well, gee, you know, are you trying to privatize the institution? That, again, I'll use my word, I've used it twice. That's nonsense. That's not what it's about at all. It's about us being able to take all the talent and ability that we have here and make certain we use it to our full extent. The university's budget, which is $5 billion, we only receive 10% from the state. And so, therefore, in this kind of grand bargain that we're looking for, give us more freedom. We will remain accountable. We'll remain accountable to the legislature, to the people of the state. But therefore, we can be much more aggressive in terms of pursuing opportunities. Our goal is to create ideas. That's our calling. But our goal also, as a calling, is to take those ideas and turn them into jobs for Ohioans. And we need to have the ability to be able to do that. And that's this notion of transferring those ideas from the bench and from the library into opportunities for Ohioans to stay here and for Ohioans to grow. And that is clearly what this kind of entrepreneurial freedom would allow us to be able to do.
Thank you very much for that calls. We have an email from Carl. He says, just an aside, OSU won the National College Water Skiing Competition without a coach. Does they want to toot their
hey,
own
gosh, I, that must have just happened then.
I
know nothing about the coach, as a matter of fact. So if we could do that, that's a great idea.
They have a question. Carl has a question. Asks, any chance of requiring bike helmets on campus? Biking is a big deal on
campus. Yeah, biking is a big deal. In fact, I'm just getting myself ready to prepare for Pelotonia, and a great believer in bike helmets. I don't want to bring up a personal issue, but I had a son-in-law killed and on a scooter, and my daughter nearly killed, and those issue of helmets are very important. Requirement, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer of whether or not we can require bike helmets.
If the state doesn't require them.
Yeah, if the state doesn't require them, and I'll have to check on that. But that's a great idea, and certainly one that I would entertain, I can assure you.
Okay, thanks to that email from Carl. And Cliff in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Dr. Gee. My question and I guess comment surrounds tuition. My wife and I both were professionals. We were fortunate enough to have parents that sacrificed to make sure that both of us got college degrees. We've had three children, and we have saved, in some cases before they were even born, for their college education. Moved back here in '99 with a decent nest egg, and since that point, tuition, and not just Ohio State, I'm not just picking on them, but has more than doubled. And like my parents made a commitment to me to pay for my education, I made the commitment to pay for my three's education. I don't know whose salary has doubled since 1999, but I don't know those people. And quite frankly, I have made my commitment, and I plan to hold to that. But every year when I hear 3%, 4%, 5% on top of the previous increase, it just makes me very angry. And I guess my question is, how much is enough?
Well, let me respond to you. First of all, remember, I was president of an Ivy League university, Brown. I was president of a great private institution. You know, their tuition is $58,000 to $60,000 a year right now. And they have no – I used to always say the way that I set tuition at Brown was I waited for Harvard to set its tuition. I do it $100 less. Ohio State is exactly the opposite. Low tuition. We're the fifth lowest tuition in the state, by the way. We did not raise our tuition for the last 3 years. We raised our tuition this past year. Remember what I said. We have 10% of the funding coming from the state. The tuition cost of for a student here barely covers about a third of the education that they get right now. Secondly of all, an Ohio State tuition. So therefore, if you take cost and quality, we're one of the great educational bargains in the country. And in fact, every magazine says that. One of the great educational bargains in America is Ohio State. The second thing is this, that let's take a look at the earning power. The earning power has escalated, so you say the tuition has doubled, but earning power has more than tripled in terms of a college education. Right now, the unemployment rate for an Ohio State educated person is about 3% or 3.5%. If you're a high school degree, it's about 15% or more. That in and of itself is an investment, which is a great family investment. The second thing is this, is the earning power of an Ohio State degree is now well over $1 million difference between a high school degree and an Ohio State degree. I will tell you, by any measure that you take a look at, that's one of the great investments you'll make in your kids' future. And as I say, you take a look at it has doubled, but it's doubled from a base that was very, very small. And the earning power and the ability to be able to do things with that degree has tripled and quadrupled.
Thank you, Cliff.
Well, can I follow up with a question?
Sure.
Okay. I hear your comments, and quite frankly, I've been analyzed and seen, you know, what the starting salaries are, which, by the way, I've seen some of those being the salaries that are being printed are just they're a joke, okay? My daughter just graduated from Ohio State back in June. The starting salaries are nowhere near what is being claimed by some of these services, which I have no idea where they get their data.
Okay.
Like I said, we just keep going on and on with these increases, and I understand from a base, and when you compare to Brown and what have you, that's a different situation. But for the average people that are out there, like my wife and myself, working hard to pay for their kids' tuition or help them with tuition, What controls? What are you doing to bring the cost down?
And I think that that's a great question, Carl. Let me just say that I think that that is, and the answer is we're doing a heck of a lot to keep the cost in the tow. We had Moody's and S&P, which are the two great rating agencies, take a look at what we're doing in terms of cost control and a variety of other things, and that's how we get our bond ratings. We have one of the highest bond ratings in the country because we're one of the most efficient institutions in America. And so I think that those are steady signs. But you as a taxpayer have absolutely the right to answer, and I applaud that. What are we doing to keep costs down? But what I want to say to you is the fact that you take a look at the quality and the cost and what we've accomplished based upon that. There is no doubt that it's a remarkable investment.
Thank you, Cliff, for that call. 614-292-8513 if you want to speak with Ohio State University President Gordon Gee. We have an email from Angel. She asks, could you discuss the program where people can transition from Columbus State Community College to OSU? This sounds like a great program.
It's a hyper program, right? And the whole purpose of that is to make it very, very seamless. So Columbus State is our great partner. David Harrison, who's the president there, is just a remarkable leader. And we really wanted to make certain that in that partnership that we made it very, very easy for students to move forward. And so that's what the purpose of this program is. It's one of those kind of seamless, energetic transitions that one can make. Secondly of all, we're really taking a look at other kinds of programs. We have this pathway to medical school program that we start kids in at Columbus State and community colleges. The point being is the fact that a great public university cannot truly reach its greatness unless it has great partners in the private sector, the public sector, in particular our community colleges, which in so many ways are the open door. And another way to answer Carl's question is that there are a number of pathways into the institution, and Columbus State is certainly one of those that does a terrific job. So that's the purpose of it. The purpose of it is to make certain that what we do is we create an opportunity for kids who are well-trained and who have great options at Columbus State to be able to move very quickly into an Ohio State education.
Okay, my guest is Gordon Gee. He's Ohio State University's president, and we'll be right back with him. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear the questions you wish you could have asked to people like Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Did it help to hear what your voice sounded like on helium? Did you learn something about your voice you didn't know before?
Yeah, I learned that I don't really need the helium.
Because it's pretty easy to flick that switch and go right up there.
The most interesting people in show business on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon, here on 89.7 NPR News. There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or like WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily News Loop e-newsletter. You can do that at WOSU.org/email and sign up.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
And on your drive home, catch up on the day's events with All Things Considered. Join NPR's Robert Siegel, Michelle Norris, and Melissa Block, along with 89.7's Marilyn Smith, for all the day's news on All Things Considered, weekday afternoons beginning at 4. On 89.7 NPR News. There's a chance of rain off and on throughout the day today and a high of 53 degrees. More rain tonight and a low of 50. And a chance of rain for Wednesday. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Oh.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Ohio State University President Gordon Gee. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or you can email us, as did Jordan, at allsides@wosu.org. And the email from Jordan says, OSU is recognized and respected for its commitment to acceptance of the GLBT community, the gay community. As a graduating senior and a lesbian, I am saddened and disappointed to hear John Boehner was invited to be the commencement speaker, given his strong anti-gay rights record. Will you discuss the decision to invite Mr. Boehner, since he contradicts the values of acceptance and tolerance that OSU seems to promote? And, of course, we're talking about the Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner from Ohio.
Well, you know, I think that I appreciate the view, but I think that what we need to understand is commencement is not about politics. Commencement is about commencement. John Boehner is the first speaker of the House of Representatives in this nation since 1932. Secondly, Bob is the third most powerful man in the country.
From Ohio.
And he's from Ohio, and he comes from humble beginnings. He has had a remarkable history in terms of what he's achieved with, from a very large family. I think the minute that we start having a political filter, then we're not going to be able to invite anyone. And so that is not what this is about. This is about recognition and celebration and for both our students and others. And I think that his story is a great American story. And I, for one, applaud what he has achieved as an individual and look forward to having him here with us.
Okay, thanks for that email, Jordan. And Randy from Granby, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. We seem to know that the athletics definitely excel against top-tier programs in the nation, but a lot of people don't seem to realize that our academic departments do the same thing, competing against top-tier universities and Ivy Leagues. And I'd like to ask President Gee what he thinks are his personal favorites up-and-coming academic departments.
Oh, wow.
Where do you see them going in 5 to 10 years?
choose among my children. Oh, my heavens. But first of all, Randy makes an important point, and this gets lost. It certainly doesn't get lost, I think, with a lot of certainly doesn't get lost within the institution. You know, we don't build a great university on the backs of an athletic program. No one has, no one will, and no one ever should even think about that. What we do is we build a great program on the basis of having a world-class faculty with world-class students. I think the thing that I'm most proud of in general is the fact that when we moved to selective admissions when I was first here in 1990, the bow wave of that is just significant. We now have a 94% retention rate. We have the highest quality students in the history of the university, one of the most selective public universities in the country at our graduate and professional levels. We're just hot as hell. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of is an overall profile that Ohio students now come to Ohio. They don't leave Ohio. They come to Ohio State in order to get that kind of an experience from all over the world. Secondly, in terms of some of our programs, if you want me to think about a program that I would just talk right off the top of my head, mm-hmm. our programs in Chinese languages and literatures is one of the best in the world. We win these bridge competitions. We do a variety of things. We've just appointed a new chair of political science, Rick Herman. We've always been one of the great leading programs in terms of political science in this country. I was just over listening to Susan Hartman, who is retiring, and our historians have set a baseline in terms of excellence that few have. Our English program, largest in the country, 104 faculty members, larger than a lot of small liberal arts colleges, remarkable achievements there. In engineering, we just appointed a new engineering dean. One of the reasons we brought in one of the really leading scientists, metallurgists in the world, and the reason is the fact that engineering is doing so well. And we need to make certain that it is really a signature program at the institution. Obviously, we're investing $1 billion in life sciences over on that particular side of campus. Perhaps one of just because of the fact that I have such interest in kind of eclectic interest myself. You know, our program in physics and astrophysics is just superb. One of the best in the country, if not in the world.
They've been on the show. They're
absolutely wonderful. So I could go on and on. Nursing, we just appointed a new nursing dean. We're going to become the healthiest campus in the country, our dental school. I could go on and on. And so the point is I'm making is the fact that it's great to be in a university in which the university president can talk about veterinary medicine and realize you're talking about one of the best in the nation. So I'm very proud of all the things we're doing.
Okay, Randy, thanks for that call. Dispatch reporter Encarnita Pyle wrote about the trend to cut faculty sabbaticals to save money, and that's not necessarily the case in Central Ohio. And Governor John Kasich has called on professors to teach more classes, as you mentioned earlier. What impact might those sorts of policies have on Ohio's ability to attract the best of the best?
Well,
like the point you've just been talking about?
I make a point right now, which is this. Of the 3,600 colleges and universities in this country, 3,590 of them would love to have my problems. And by that I mean that we have been through a very tough time in budgets. Ours is one of the few institutions that has not suffered major budgetary reductions. The University of California just took a $1.4 billion hit. Texas is taking double-digit reductions. The University of North Carolina took a 22% on top of a 14%. The University of Minnesota, our colleagues to the north, just took another $400 million. I mean, I could go on down the line. The point that I'm making is the fact that we're going to be very predatory. We're going to be very aggressive in terms of hiring. This is one of the great places in the country to come, and it's one of the great opportunities to come.
And you don't think policies like
the point is those policies were talked about.
Right.
They're not policies. And secondly of all, you want to come to a place that is progressive and aggressively pursuing an agenda. And the answer is that I think that we have one of the better situations in America. By the way, I just read the Boston Globe yesterday, where Harvard, a pretty good institution, is running a $632 million budget deficit right now. So it's happening all over the place.
Ryan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
Dr. Gee, I actually had a question for you regarding Ohio State's contract with Sodexo, the food service contractor. I was in your office, actually, a couple weeks ago asking you about this. Sodexo has they've been the subject of multiple reports, the Human Rights Report, Trans-Africa Report, for numerous human rights abuses across the world. On our own campus, we've heard complaints from workers of everything from sexism, racism, sexual harassment. And when I met with you a couple weeks ago, you said that this is a human rights issue, but it's not your issue. And I was just wondering what you meant by that.
Well, you know, Ryan, and I remember our conversation. By the way, Ryan is tenacious in terms of support. I admire him greatly. Let me just say this again. What I said, that this was an international issue, not necessarily a university issue. We are concerned about the folks who worked at this institution, making certain they're well taken care of, that we meet our standards. And what I've said on a number of occasions, this really started out initially about the fact that that there was an attempt to unionize Sodexo. Mm-hmm. And then what I've always said is the fact that if the Sodexo workers want to be unionized, if they feel they're being harassed, if they feel that they're not being well taken care of, right, but the things the university has investigated that time and time and time again, and we find no real evidence about that. So my point, Ryan, is the fact that if the Sodexo workers want to be represented by the union, then they can have that vote, and we can have that vote in a fair and confidential manner, and make certain that takes place. And I will be interested to know how that vote comes out, and if they want to change, if they want to have move in another direction. So I think that what we need to do is we need to leave it to the Sodexo workers to make that decision. And I'm willing, and in fact, Sodexo itself is very willing to undergo that union vote. And so, therefore, when you start raising issues about what Sodexo did in other parts of the world, first of all, we don't know for sure what that is. Secondly of all, Sodexo has its own answers. Third, we people get painted with very broad brushes. I'm very concerned about making sure that we have a fair and a humane and a very positive relationship with anyone who works on this campus, and they meet the university standards, and that's what I meant. And so, therefore, when we have that vote, and I've said this on a number of occasions, when we have that union vote and those Sodexo workers themselves tell us exactly how they feel about what they're doing, then we'll talk about the broader set of issues.
Thanks, Ryan, for that call. There's a documentary circulating out there. It's called Race to Nowhere. Mm-hmm. And part of it's about how high school students no longer are really preparing for college. Instead, they're preparing to apply for college, and that the byproduct of this trend is that they're resume building, they're and stressing out in the process, that they're cheating for better grades, and that more students than ever require remedial courses that don't even count toward their degree programs when they enter college. They don't really know what they want to do. They just know they have to get into college somewhere. And because the Ohio State has become more selective, I was wondering if that's an issue for you.
I think it's an issue everywhere. And, of course, you know, I was at the sixth most selective university in the country, Brown, and the eighth most selective university in the country in Vanderbilt. So I know the kind of stress that happens. And one of the things that I worry about, this is one of the things that frankly worried me, and I'm getting over into international policy probably more than I should, but the No Child Left Behind issue was that what happened, they set standards, but it became standardization, people teaching to the test instead of, I think, teaching people creativity and energy. I was on the College Board task force that really revamped the SAT. And one of the things, and I was on this particular task force, one of the things we did is we created a writing test to make certain the kids were not just kind of hyper-preparing themselves, building their resume, a variety of other things. That's the whole purpose of fine-tuning and having one of those written writing sections in order to be able to really tell whether these kids can think and think well and think based upon their educational training. Saying that, I do think that we have gotten into a very competitive notion for those institutions that are very competitive, which Ohio State is one. Now, of those 3,600 colleges and universities that I mentioned, the dirty little secret is that the vast majority of those have very little competition in terms of ability to be able to get into them. But it's that kind of select group in which there's a lot of resume building in many instances in order to get into them.
And Pat from Northwest Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You wanted to talk about the selectivity issue as well.
Yes. Hi, Dr. Gee.
Hi, Pat.
I guess part of it is my concern is as a taxpayer in the state of Ohio, it seems to me like my tax money should be supporting higher education for all its citizens, and I have become concerned that OSU is becoming so selective that there are a lot of kids with talent who are left out, and the ones who are there with maybe a pinch more talent are getting maybe groomed a little more, offered a few more perks.
I hear this a lot. And first of all, let me just say that there are thousands of talented kids who are not admitted to Ohio State who are very talented. Number one. Number two is, and so we recognize that. Number two is the fact that we do have our smaller campuses through which people can enter the university. We do not
the regional campuses.
Our regional campuses. I call them smaller campuses because I hate the word regional. It sounds like prison or something like that. But the answer is that so they do have options to an Ohio State degree that really are very clear. The third thing is this: when I was here before, we were a Red Cross unit. By that, we had about half of our students who were failing. They were taking the so-called dumbbell math and science courses and a variety of other things. Those were a diversion of resources. We cannot solve the ills of public education. We can be their partner and try to set high standards, a variety of other things. But I would say to you that I think that in this partnership, students can't expect to slide and not do what they should be doing in terms of that part of the partnership, and then expect to be admitted to the university, and that we take care of their problems. So that partnership is a very clear one. Students need to perform well, and the university needs to be able to make a world-class education available to those students.
Thanks, Pat, for that call. We appreciate it. And Marie and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm wondering what the university, if the university, is doing anything to create a conducive learning environment to non-traditional students. For example, many of the things that I thought were absolutely wonderful as an undergraduate, I'm back for a doctorate, they just aren't working. For example, having to pay for the gym when we're there one or two nights a week, and we would really like to apply that money to a gym in our own neighborhood. or the sabbatical. I have several peers who would love to come back and do a doctorate, but they're unable to fulfill the residency requirements of going full-time while working full-time. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, and thank you very much, and I appreciate the fact that you're moving on to your doctorate. Yeah, the thing about the university needs to have a number of different kinds of options, and we are certainly we certainly have those. We're working to make them even more available. Again, my argument right at the very beginning about this whole teaching responsibility issue, mm-hmm. the university needs to be equally vigilant that we don't have just one size fits all ourselves. And so that also has to do with the technology issue that we talked about earlier, the three-year degree, a variety of other things. We need to consider all options so that we make for the best and brightest and those who really need and want and are capable of fulfilling an Ohio State education, that we make different options available to them. Our Fisher College of Business does a fabulous job in terms of having different kinds of options for professionals in our MBA programs that I think are really set the standard for what the rest of the university can do. So I appreciate that, and the answer is yes, we are working on that and vastly improving as we speak.
Thank you, Marie, for that call. Two OSU students and another man have been charged with assault on a police officer after Saturday night's Woodfest. I guess, first of all, I wonder if you're hoping for more rain throughout the spring term. And, speak to that issue and
what
the university does in these
Well, first of all, the university is very diligent. Almost immediately I received notification from our Vice President for Student Life, Dr. Jay, and obviously our own police were involved. The issue is a very simple one, and that is the fact that, first of all, we don't punish the many because of the excesses of a few. Secondly of all, when kids get out of bounds, then they need to be dealt with by the university through its judicial process, et cetera. We don't tolerate that. The third thing is that we want our students to have a great educational experience. We also want them to have the ability to be able to have fun. And by and large, they do a wonderful job. As you well know, I patrol the streets regularly, very late at night. I'm out there visiting a number of these events, and I can tell you in very few occasions have I seen misbehavior. When there is misbehavior, then it needs to be dealt with directly and forthrightly and in an aggressive way, and that's precisely what we're doing in this instance.
Just one more quick question from Mike. Mm-hmm. He wanted to know why you let Maurice Claret back into school, the former, Ohio State University football star.
Mm-hmm. I guess that the reason is the fact that this university is a humane place in which we believe in redemption.
Well, on that note, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Today. Always fun to be with you.
It's Ohio State University President Gordon Gee. Thanks for all those calls and emails. We appreciate them, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Home Instead Senior Care, helping families eliminate worry, reduce stress, and reestablish personal freedom. More at 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead. To us, it's personal.